Chapter 5. External Support. Type of Actor Providing Support. Chapter 2 detailed how Iranian clerics were eager to export the revolution once they assumed power in 1979. Which organizations did they establish to effectuate the revolution's export? As a foundation for the rest of this chapter, this section begins by detailing the main bureaucratic machinery established by the new regime that, at one time or another, played an important role in exporting the revolution, and in particular, midwifing the establishment and the rise of Hezbollah. Also presented are some examples of the Iranian clerics' collaboration with Hezbollah, which will be expanded on later in this chapter. To start, perhaps the most influential Iranian actor on matters related to Hezbollah is the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, IRGC, which was established shortly after the revolution, and of note is the Quds Force, which is the unit within the IRGC with the responsibility for exporting the revolution and, in particular, with responsibility for the Hezbollah portfolio. Today, the Quds Force is led by Major General Qasem Soleimani, a man of legendary status who was recently described as, quote, the single most powerful operative in the Middle East today, close quote. It has separate units focused on intelligence, sabotage, special operations, politics, and finance, with a total membership between 10 and 20,000 members and with a base at the former U.S. Embassy in Tehran. The Quds Force was also organized geographically, with the 1st Corps focused on Iraq, the 2nd Corps focused on Pakistan and Iran's border provinces, the 3rd Corps devoted to Turkey and Kurdish groups, and the 4th Corps focused on Afghanistan and Central Asia. Additionally, the IRGC maintains a level of autonomy within the Iranian political system, as the elite within the organization are selected by, and therefore answerable to, the supreme leader. As detailed in Chapter 2, the IRGC spearheaded the initial deployment into Lebanon after the 1982 Israeli invasion. A first wave of 800 personnel was deployed to Baalbek, and another 700 were subsequently sent to Baalbek and to other small villages in the eastern Bekaa Valley, including Nabishit and Bertal. These units provided military training and religious indoctrination to units that eventually made up the sections of the Special Security Apparatus, SSA, Hezbollah's External Operations Wing. Additionally, the IRGC played an important role in building up Hezbollah to fight Israel once the Lebanese Civil War ended in 1990. For instance, IRGC personnel in mobile training camps in the Bekaa Valley provided operational advice to members of Hezbollah's military wing, the Islamic Resistance, as it engaged in a guerrilla campaign against Israel and the South Lebanese Army, SLA. This training was carried out by 20 training officers from the IRGC who were specialists in various guerrilla warfare techniques. Specifically, Hezbollah fighters were trained in ambush techniques, the concealment and detonation of roadside bombs, mortar attacks, advanced reconnaissance and intelligence, infiltration techniques, and psychological warfare. Interestingly, this training was supervised by a senior commander of the Islamic Resistance. This apparent reversal of roles in the sponsor-proxy relationship, with members of the proxy force overseeing the activity of personnel from the state sponsor, is perhaps one of the features that makes this case of a sponsor-proxy relationship distinctive. Another distinctive form of collaboration that developed between the IRGC and Hezbollah is that the IRGC came to rely on Hezbollah to enhance an asymmetric military capability, specifically an enhanced terrorist capability against Israel facilitated by inroads made by Hezbollah with Palestinian groups in the West Bank and Gaza Strip. As noted by Levitt, by the late 1990s, Hezbollah began to develop a terrorist infrastructure within the West Bank and attempted to infiltrate operatives into Israel to gather intelligence and undertake terrorist attacks. This effort was organized by Unit 1800 within Hezbollah and led by Imad Mounia, who reportedly received orders from Tehran to work with Hamas. Another communication from Iran, this time directed toward Palestinian groups, is also quite telling. As detailed in an October 2001 Palestinian intelligence document, officials from Hezbollah, Hamas, and Palestinian Islamic Jihad met in Damascus in an attempt to increase the joint activity inside, in other words, in Gaza, the West Bank, and Israel, with financial aid from Iran. This meeting was prompted by an, quote, Iranian message which had been transferred to the Hamas and Islamic Jihad leaderships, according to which they must not allow a calming down of the situation on the ground at this period, close quote. The report went on to add that Iranian funds were to be transferred to the Palestinian groups through Hezbollah. Chapter 2 also noted the existence of an Iranian government body known as the Office of Islamic Liberation Movements, which helped provide the framework under which Hezbollah's initial charter and constitution were developed. The Office of Islamic Liberation Movements was originally supervised by Ayatollah Hussein Ali Montazeri and led by Mehdi Hashemi, a relative, and the organization started out as a formal unit of the IRGC before becoming a semi-independent institution. In 1986, it was transferred to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, and its chief role was to implement policy directives pertaining to Hezbollah decided by the Supreme National Security Council. In turn, it delegated tasks to the embassies in Damascus and Beirut, and also to the IRGC itself. The Ministry of Foreign Affairs, as well as particular embassies, especially those in Lebanon and Syria, played an important role in Hezbollah's operations conducted jointly with Iran. It has already been noted that Iran's ambassadors in Damascus and Beirut have sat on Hezbollah's Shura Council, and that Modashemi, the Iranian ambassador to Syria in the early 1980s, played a fundamental role in establishing Hezbollah. In fact, the Iranian embassy in Damascus functioned as a nerve center at this time, as Modashemi oversaw a monthly budget in the tens of millions of dollars, and along with Ahmad Vahidi, at the time the chief intelligence officer of the IRGC, and Mostafa Mohammad Najjar, the commander of the IRGC, was responsible for expanding the activities of the IRGC in Lebanon. Additionally, in the 1980s, various personnel in these embassies played important roles in coordinating Hezbollah and IRGC activity and facilitating the supply of the insurgent group. For instance, in carrying out abductions ordered by the SSA, Hezbollah's external operations wing, operational personnel maintained close contact with Iran's embassies in Beirut and Damascus, as well as with IRGC officials. In general, to facilitate Hezbollah operations at this time, Iranian diplomatic staff provided intelligence on potential targets, while the IRGC provided weapons and training. Also, Iran's military attaché in Damascus coordinated activities between the IRGC in Baalbek and IRGC headquarters in the Syrian border village of Zebdani. Meanwhile, the Iranian military attaché in Beirut was active in supplying members of the SSA with training and military equipment, and also played a role in hostage-taking, particularly in the initial acquisition of, interrogation of, and housing of foreign hostages. Iranian officials also had a role in ordering Shia militant groups to engage in terrorism, with IRGC officials playing a supporting role. An intercepted message recorded Iranian intelligence officials in Tehran telling Modashemi to contact Hussein Mousawi, the leader of Islamic Amal, and instructed him, quote, to take spectacular action against the United States, close quote. A message that, according to U.S. intelligence, culminated with the 1983 attack on the U.S. Marine barracks in Beirut. This attack was supported by the IRGC contingent in Lebanon, which had a role in planning and supervising the attack. Additionally, Bergman noted that Modashemi ordered Mugniya to get Hezbollah more involved in kidnapping, and between late 1982 and June 1986, Hezbollah kidnapped 51 foreign citizens. As will be discussed later in this chapter, the involvement of Iranian diplomats and facilities to enable terrorist activities by Hezbollah was repeated in the 1990s, particularly in Argentina. Iranian diplomatic facilities were also used to provide cover to Hezbollah and IRGC officials. Ransdorp noted that Mugniya was believed to travel with an Iranian diplomatic passport, and that he operated undercover at the Iranian embassies in Beirut and Damascus. Additionally, around the time of the July 2006 war with Israel, Mukniya's deputy traveled to the Iranian embassy in Damascus to receive satellite imagery of Israel from the Syrians. More generally, Khalili noted that the Ministry of Foreign Affairs assigned members of the IRGC to various Iranian consulates and embassies. And at one point in time, the director of Arab Affairs at the embassy, Hussein Sheikh al-Islam, coordinated the effort to place IRGC personnel in diplomatic facilities abroad. Another important actor is the Ministry of Culture and Islamic Guidance, which has worked with the Ministry of Foreign Affairs to establish cultural centers in Iranian embassies. One such center played an important role in providing cover to operatives who organized the bombing of the Asociación Mutual Israelita Argentina, AMIA, center in Buenos Aires in July 1994. One of the responsibilities of this ministry is, quote, informing the world community about the basis and aspirations of the Islamic Revolution, close quote. And it controls the Culture and Islamic Communication Organization, the Islamic Republic News Agency, and the Hajj and Pilgrimage Organization. In 2009, it was led by a former IRGC general, and the cultural center in the Iranian embassy in Beirut sought to gain followers for Hujjat al-Islam Sayyid Ali Khamenei, the current supreme leader of Iran. The Iranian Ministry of Intelligence and Security, MOIS, played a fundamental role in providing intelligence assistance to Hezbollah. MOIS was established in 1984, and by 1997, it was one of the largest intelligence services in the Middle East, with 30,000 employees and 15 departments. MOIS is suspected of providing training to senior SSA members in camps within Iran, and it has also helped SSA members avoid detection while traveling and provided aid in the procurement of weapons, identities, and funding, as well as local liaison assistance through identifying recruits among the Lebanese diaspora. Rensdorp noted that a formal liaison relationship and command structure was established between senior SSA members and Iranian intelligence, with personnel in Beirut and Damascus receiving instructions from MOIS personnel in Tehran, and with the relationship being brokered by the intelligence officer of the IRGC force in Baalbek. MOIS also worked with the SSA in foreign operations. Specifically, MOIS, along with Hezbollah personnel and officials from the Iranian embassy in France, coordinated a 1986 bombing campaign in Paris. Additionally, Levitt noted that MOIS and Hezbollah collaborated in other operations abroad, such as in Hezbollah's failed 1994 truck bombing of the Israeli embassy in Bangkok. One Hezbollah operative, Pandu Yudinawata of Indonesian descent, worked for Iranian intelligence in Malaysia, and his case was managed for several years by the MOIS station in Malaysia before he was turned over to Hezbollah. Pandu went on to serve as a procurer of documents and recruiter for the group, and he also played a role in the failed 1994 bombing. Furthermore, the group and MOIS reportedly collaborated in establishing a base on the Iranian shore of the Caspian Sea for the training of Hezbollah personnel in operations similar to those performed by U.S. Navy SEALs. Lastly, other important Iranian actors in the relationship with Hezbollah are the Martyrs Foundation and the Foundation of the Oppressed. Both provided assistance to the families of those killed during the 1979 revolution and to poorer families in need, and they also channeled Iranian financing to Hezbollah to fund a variety of social services for the Shia community, including hospitals, religious schools, agricultural cooperatives, and construction projects. More detail regarding the assistance provided by these organizations in Lebanon, particularly the Martyrs Foundation, is provided later in this chapter. Iranian financing also supported the activities of a number of committees within Jihad al-Bina, Holy Reconstruction Organ, which functions as the main institution coordinating the social and financial needs of Hezbollah members and the broader Shia community. For instance, Iranian financing enabled the Islamic Health Committee to establish major hospitals in Baalbek and in Beirut's southern suburbs in 1986, as well as various other medical centers and pharmacies throughout Lebanon. Additionally, In collaboration with the Martyrs Foundation, the Financial Aid Committee disbursed $90 million during 1982 through 1986 to the families of Hezbollah members who had died or were wounded, and the committee also extended loans for business ventures, marriages, and school expenses. Furthermore, as discussed later in this chapter, Iranian aid has come to play a prominent role in helping various regions in Lebanon recover after damage caused by recent fighting between Israel and Hezbollah. Motivations for external support. Chapter 2 noted in detail the varied ideological and balance of power motivations for Iranian sponsorship of Hezbollah. Sponsorship enabled Iran to leapfrog the wall of containment imposed by war with Iraq, which was receiving assistance from other Arab regimes fearful of the spread of the Islamic Revolution, which in turn presented Iran with an opportunity to spread the revolution to a potentially fertile territory. Additionally, the IRGC's presence in Lebanon allowed Iran to lead the Islamic resistance against Israel and Zionism, thereby supporting claims that it, rather than Saudi Arabia, was the rightful ruler of the Ummah. Finally, it allowed Iran to project itself into Arabic and Middle Eastern politics and thereby influence developments in the region and perhaps expand its overall regional influence, as well as potentially enhance the popularity of its Islamic form of government. However, the relationship between sponsor and proxy was mediated by a third party, Syria, which also had its own interests that were at times inconsistent with those of the sponsor or proxy. Third-party involvement was also a crucial factor in prior examples of relationships between sponsors and proxies, as in the case of American sponsorship of the Afghan Mujahideen during the 1980s to oust the Soviet Union from Afghanistan. American involvement in this case was mediated by Pakistan, and in particular by Pakistan's powerful Inter-Services Intelligence Agency. Future state sponsorship of proxies may also involve the participation of other parties, whether state or non-state, and so it may be useful to examine how Iran's support for Hezbollah was influenced by the presence of an influential third party that, in effect, had a vote regarding the modalities of the relationship between sponsor and proxy. Although in the context of the current civil war in Syria, it is commonly accepted that the two countries are natural allies, in the early 1980s, Iran and Syria were considered strange bedfellows. As a secular Ba'athist dictatorship, Syria was resolutely opposed to radical Islam, having brutally suppressed the Sunni Muslim Brotherhood in the town of Hama in 1982, and it was equally opposed to the establishment of an Islamic state, whether of Sunni or Shia orientation, in Lebanon, a country that many Syrian elites never regarded as a distinct entity. For its part, Iran found itself in an alliance with one Ba'athist regime hostile to Islamism, while it denounced the other, Iraq, as an imperialist stooge. Yet mutual antipathy in the early 1980s toward Iraq, Israel, and Western influence in the Levant convinced both of these countries to toss aside ideology in favor of pursuit of an alliance that advanced the interests of both states. Syrian outreach to Iran's clerics actually preceded the revolution, as Syria's frustration with the Shah's close relationship with Israel and friendly relations with pro-Western Arab states hostile to Syria prompted it to establish relations with various Iranian opposition groups, including the emerging Shia movement led by Khomeini. An important development was Syria's cultivation of a relationship with Musa al-Sadr, who legitimized the Alawite regime in Damascus by issuing a fatwa, religious ruling, in 1973, recognizing Alawites as Shia Muslims. This ruling enhanced Syria's position within the Lebanese Shia community and led to the development of strong links between Syria and Amal. Amal became Syria's proxy in Lebanon, and links between Syria and Iran's clerical leadership were facilitated by Syria's close relationship with al-Sadr and by the training imparted by Amal to various Iranian opposition figures. How has Syria facilitated Iran's sponsorship of Hezbollah? Or, to put it differently, how did Syria interpose itself within the sponsor-proxy relationship? To begin with, Syria functioned as a land bridge through which Iran sent supplies to Hezbollah and IRGC personnel to Lebanon. Arms shipments, including those containing sophisticated weapons, were transported by air from Iran to Syria. Hafez al-Assad did not permit the Iranians to fly directly to Beirut, where they were unloaded at the airport in Damascus or at military-controlled airfields and were then shipped over land over the Syrian-Lebanese border. Once in Lebanon, they were distributed to protected and hidden arms depots managed by Hezbollah. Additionally, Syria controlled the IRGC's access to the Bekaa Valley, as it determined the number and frequency of IRGC visits to this region. There are other examples of the important role Syria played in the Iran-Hezbollah relationship. Khalili noted that Syrian diplomatic facilities were used to cloak the movement of Iranian arms and personnel. For instance, IRGC convoys received Syrian diplomatic license plates, which enabled them to operate without interference in Lebanon, while at other times IRGC personnel were transported by Syrian diplomatic vehicles. Syrian intelligence personnel also played an important role. For instance, an important contact for Mutashemi, the Iranian ambassador to Syria in the early 1980s, was Brigadier General Ghazi Kanan, the head of Syrian military intelligence in Lebanon. Kanan also managed the relationship with the SSA, as Syrian military intelligence actively participated in planning Hezbollah operations before the pullout of multinational forces from Beirut in 1984. Additionally, Syrian control of the Bekaa Valley at this time enabled Syrian military intelligence to facilitate the transfer of hostages to Beirut, as well as their release. Syria's control of the flow of Iranian personnel and arms to Hezbollah highlights an important aspect of the potential impact of third parties on the dynamics of the relationship between sponsors and proxies. Specifically, Syria's role as a critical intermediary between Iran and Hezbollah provided it with leverage through which to influence the relationship, to ensure that both the sponsor and proxy were behaving in ways that were consistent with Syria's interests. Although Syria welcomed Iran's intervention in Lebanon in 1982 to blunt the impact of the Israeli invasion, and assisted with hostage taking before the departure of international forces in 1984, there were limits on the degree to which Syria would facilitate the achievement of Iranian foreign policy goals. Specifically, Ba'athist Syria would never have allowed the establishment of an Islamic State in Lebanon guided by a Veliati Faqih. Such an end state clashed with the overriding Syrian desire for hegemony in Lebanon. Additionally, Syria was not interested in a holy war against Israel to liberate Jerusalem and eliminate the Zionist entity. Unlike Iran, which was far removed from a potential battlefront with Israel, Syria did not have the luxury to entertain such fantasies, as it would undoubtedly pay a high price for a total war against Israel. Rather, Syria was interested in using calibrated and controlled violence against Israel to achieve specific aims, such as the return of the Golan Heights, and so ultimately it was interested, literally, in controlling the shooting directed at Israel rather than seeking Israel's elimination, a desired but ultimately impractical outcome from the Syrian perspective. Furthermore, Syria's support for hostage-taking and other forms of terrorism ended with the departure of foreign forces in 1984, and subsequently Syria developed an interest in stability in Lebanon, both as a sign of its hegemony over the country and to mend its relationship with the West, which grew in importance as sponsorship from its Soviet patron declined in the late 1980s. Nor did it wish to see Hezbollah grow too powerful relative to Amal, its proxy. Hence, Syria's control of Iranian access to Hezbollah provided it with access points to influence the sponsor-proxy relationship. And in meetings with Iranian officials, Syrian government representatives were not averse to hinting that the IRGC was in Lebanon at Syria's sufferance, and that Iran's support for Hezbollah against Israel and its efforts to use the conflict to spread the revolution and build influence in the Arab and Muslim world could be terminated by Syria. Through the 1989 Taif Agreement and the May 1991 Treaty of Brotherhood, Cooperation and Coordination between Syria and Lebanon, Iran ultimately acceded to Syria's demand for hegemony in Lebanon by foregoing the goal of establishing an Islamic State in Lebanon and agreeing to focus on the conflict with Israel. The broader point is that although the involvement of a third party may be necessary to effectuate a sponsor-proxy relationship, any initial overlap of interests among all three parties may dissipate as a result of regional and international developments. Any resulting clash of interests that emerges between, on one hand, the sponsor and proxy, and on the other, the third party, must be managed and may result in the abandonment of certain interests, in other words, an Islamic State in Lebanon, so that groups may pursue arguably more vital interests, in other words, a military effort against Israel that all parties can agree on. Another interesting lesson of the current example is that proxies that arise through outside sponsorship may, as is the case with most organizations, develop an interest in their continued existence and propagation, which may clash with the desires of outside sponsors or third parties to curtail the activities and interests of the proxy. In the current case, Hezbollah opposed the Taif agreement, not only because it entailed abandoning the establishment of an Islamic State in Lebanon, but also because it called for the comprehensive disarmament of all militias. Additionally, Hezbollah was wary of Syrian sponsorship of Amal, because it was interested in being seen as the main representative of Lebanon's Shia community. And indeed, in the late 1980s, Lebanon witnessed intra-Shiite clashes between Hezbollah and Amal, and even clashes between Hezbollah and Syria. Hezbollah was ultimately permitted to keep its arms, but Syrian and Iranian collaboration at this time offers one more interesting takeaway from the current case. Specifically, in the case of the presence of a third party, if the interests of the third party and the sponsor coincide, both can collaborate to control the proxy. By the late 1980s, a relatively more pragmatic political leadership emerged in Iran under Rafsanjani, who sought to curtail some of the ideological excesses of previous Iranian foreign policy. Additionally, he sought to end the war with Iraq and improve Iran's shattered economy, which required foreign investment and better relations with the West. This desire dovetailed with the Syrian desire to improve its standing in Western capitals, and so both actors, with Syria threatening military actions, compelled Hezbollah to accept a political and military agreement with Amal in January 1989, whereby security control of Beirut was granted to Syria and that of South Lebanon to Amal. Additional Iranian pressure in the form of reduced funding, prompted by the group's continued warfare with Amal and its refusal to release foreign hostages, and the 1989 removal of Moteshemi, one of Hezbollah's chief backers, from the position of interior minister, helped convince the movement to accept the Taif agreement and thereby abandon the goal of an Islamic State in the Levant and concentrate instead on evicting the Israelis from southern Lebanon. Forms and methods used to provide support. The preceding two sections discussed in some detail both the forms of support provided by Iran to Hezbollah, such as military training and intelligence collaboration, and the methods used to provide such support, such as the use of Iranian and Syrian diplomatic facilities and personnel to transmit sensitive information and coordinate Hezbollah and IRGC actions and supplies provided to the insurgent group. In this section, these themes are expanded, and in particular, more detail is provided regarding the provision of Iranian financial and military aid and training to Hezbollah. After this discussion, we discuss the collaboration between the two parties in carrying out the 1994 AMIA bombing. Argentine officials have pieced together a rich report on the attacks, and their detailed findings provide an invaluable glimpse into the nature of the collaboration between the two parties and the type of support offered by the various Iranian government institutions charged with exporting the revolution. Iranian financial aid has played a fundamental role in enabling Hezbollah to provide social services to the Shia community and the broader population in Lebanon, and such aid proved vital in some communities given the collapse of the Lebanese state by the end of the civil war. Some estimates suggest that Iran funds Hezbollah to the tune of $100 million per year, while other estimates place this figure as high as $350 million, and a sizable portion of this total funds various public goods provided by Hezbollah to the Lebanese population. One important Iranian contributor to Lebanon's social development has been the Imam Khomeini Assistance Committee. This organization opened in Beirut in 1982 and also opened offices in Sidon, Tyre, and Baalbek. As of 2006, it had granted 130,000 scholarships and provided interest-free loans and it has helped 135,000 families in need. A noteworthy contribution to social welfare made possible by funding from the Martyrs Foundation was the construction by Jihad Albina of 4,000-liter water reservoirs in each district of Beirut's heavily Shia southern suburbs. Each reservoir was filled 5 times a day from continuously circulating tanker trucks, and in the absence of state-provided electricity in this area until 1990, generators mounted on lorries went to different buildings to provide the electricity required to pump water from private cisterns. As of 2006, Jihad Albina served as the main source of drinking water for 500,000 people. Another service provided by Jihad Albina is public refuse collection for the 500,000 residents of Dahiya, a southern suburb of Beirut. The Martyrs Foundation has also made an important contribution to the provision of healthcare services in Lebanon, principally with the construction of the Al-Rasul Al-Assam Hospital in Dahiya. All medical expenses of injured Hezbollah fighters are paid for at this facility, while 70% of expenses are covered for injured civilians. Interestingly, during elections, patients and staff at this facility are transported to and from the polls by Hezbollah volunteers. Another service provided by the foundation is the establishment, in Beirut and the Bekaa Valley, of vocational schools for the daughters of fallen Hezbollah fighters and the funding of subsidized workshops to employ them. Jihad Albina also finances the all-important reconstruction of homes destroyed in combat with Israel. Reportedly, 1 month after the 1996 Israeli military campaign Grapes of Wrath, Jihad Albina rehabilitated more than 2,800 structures damaged by Israel in 106 locations in South Lebanon. And overall, between 1993 and 2006, the organization is estimated to have rebuilt nearly 15,000 homes. Hezbollah has collaborated with the Martyrs Foundation on reconstruction, with the insurgent group determining the validity of families' housing needs and, if necessary, arranging for the required property transactions. Financing provided by the Martyrs Foundation is used to acquire land, with Jihad Albina subsequently developing plans and building the finalized structures. Recent press reports indicate that Iran has spent $400 million to rebuild Dahiya after the July 2006 war with Israel. Another important component of Iranian assistance is training and military aid. The provision of arms by Iran in the 1990s appears to have been designed to transition Hezbollah from a group primarily carrying out terrorist acts and abductions into a force capable of taking on the Israelis. Bergman pointed out that one U.S. Central Intelligence Agency report from 1999 noted that Iranian shipments to Hezbollah included Zilzal rockets with ranges of 125 to 210 kilometers, Fajr 3 and Fajr 5 rockets with ranges up to 75 kilometers, Nazak rockets with ranges of 80 to 140 kilometers, anti-tank missiles produced in Iran, land-sea missiles, 802C class, made in China, Ababil drones developed by Iran's domestic aircraft industry, Russian SA-7 and SA-14 anti-aircraft missiles, and 250 advanced night vision kits sent by Britain to Iran in 2003 as part of a joint effort to stop drug smuggling. The IRGC has also reportedly helped build underground installations for Hezbollah, including command and control bunkers operated by both Hezbollah and IRGC officials. The IRGC also built underground storage areas 8 meters deep in the Bekaa Valley that are used to store missiles and ammunition. The Bekaa Valley also houses a central operations room operated by 4 personnel, each from the IRGC and Hezbollah. As discussed, IRGC personnel provided training to Hezbollah fighters in Lebanon. Training was also undertaken in Iran itself. The 2 main camps used by the Quds Force to train foreign militants are the Imam Ali base in Tehran and the Bahonar base in Karaj, north of Tehran. Additionally, Hezbollah personnel participated in special training courses at IRGC bases in Tehran, Isfahan, Mashhad, and Avas. And Hezbollah missile units, including 200 technicians and experts, received training in Iran. Furthermore, Katz and Hendel noted that Israeli intelligence believes that at a base near Tehran, the IRGC trains militants from Hezbollah, Hamas, Islamic Jihad, and other groups in explosives, shooting, communications, reconnaissance, mortar firing, and psychological warfare. Let us now turn to a discussion of Iran and Hezbollah's collaboration in carrying out the July 1994 AMIA attack in Buenos Aires. As already indicated, a fairly detailed report has been made available by Argentine authorities, and based on what is known about this operation, what is apparent is that the preparations undertaken by Hezbollah and Iranian officials appear to have proceeded on separate tracks, with a select number of officials serving as touch points between the two parties. The decision to carry out the attack was apparently made by Iran's Supreme National Security Council during a meeting held by a subgroup, the Committee for Special Operations. Participants in this meeting included the Supreme Leader of Iran, Sayed Ali Khamenei, President Rafsanjani, Minister of Intelligence Ali Falahian, and Foreign Minister Ali Velayati. Also present were Ahmad Asghari, a suspected IRGC official at the Iranian embassy in Buenos Aires, and whose real name was Mohsen Ranjbaran, and Mohsen Rabbani, the attack's lead Iranian organizer in Argentina. Once the committee agreed on the operation, Khamenei issued a fatwa legitimizing the operation, with Falahian instructing Mughniya to form an operational group to take charge of the attack. Rabbani was made responsible for the logistics of the attack, including purchasing and arming the van to be used in the bombing, and with liaising with Hezbollah operatives in Buenos Aires and in the somewhat lawless tri-border region where Argentina, Brazil, and Paraguay meet. Mohsen Rabbani arrived in Argentina in 1983 to head the Al-Tawhid Mosque in Buenos Aires and to allegedly work for the Iranian Ministry of Agriculture, which was responsible for testing meat exported to Iran. Rabbani soon developed a network of informers that collected information for Iran. One such individual was Mohammad Reza Javadi Nia, an intelligence agent who was provided cover through the Ministry of Islamic Culture and Guidance. To get a better lay of the land, Javadi Nia, as well as other informers, worked as a taxi driver in Argentina. He also served as the cultural attaché in the embassy from 1988 to 1993, a position that was assumed by Rabbani in 1994. Rabbani himself was named an official Iranian diplomat, entailing diplomatic immunity, several months before the attack. Hezbollah began planting agents and establishing cells in the tri-border area during the peak years of the civil war, and by mid-2000, there were an estimated several hundred Hezbollah operatives in the tri-border region. Rabbani dealt extensively with Piloto Turismo, a travel agency in the tri-border area that was actually started with Hezbollah funds and, in fact, served as a front company. Piloto Turismo also provided a number of illicit services, such as obtaining fake passports and residency documents, useful for placing operatives in the tri-border region and in Argentina. One of the co-owners of Piloto Turismo, Mohammed Youssef Abdallah, served as the primary leader of Hezbollah in the region, while the other co-owner, Farouk Abdul Omeri, was the regional coordinator for Hezbollah. Hezbollah members in the tri-border region played an important coordinating role in the attack. Investigators eventually uncovered phone calls between the Iranian embassy in Buenos Aires and suspected Hezbollah personnel operating out of a travel agency and a mosque in the region. Activity by Iranian ministers and regional ambassadors picked up in the month or so before the attack. Ahmad Al-Mohada, the director of the Cultural Department of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, arrived in Argentina in June, but departed a few days later for Madrid, where MOIS maintained a regional office that oversaw activities in Latin America. Iran's ambassador to Uruguay, a suspected MOIS operative, and at least four other Iranian officials visited Argentina in June. Interestingly, a number of regional Iranian ambassadors, including the ambassadors to Argentina, Chile, and Uruguay, all left the region in late June and early July, while Hezbollah operatives entered the region. Iran used both official and unofficial cover to carry out this operation. The official cover was used for a Hezbollah operative in the tri-border region, Sheikh Bilal Mohsen Webi, a close contact of Mughniya, who reported to the Iranian Cultural Affairs Ministry. Regarding unofficial cover, one Iranian operative in Argentina was assigned to the Iranian government-owned Government Trade Corporation, which served as a front for Iranian intelligence. Once in Buenos Aires, This operative placed calls to the Ministry of Reconstruction, which itself was a front for the Quds Force. While Rabbani handled logistics in Buenos Aires, a Colombian-born Hezbollah member, Samuel Elreda, coordinated Hezbollah operations in Buenos Aires, including arranging the arrival of the Hezbollah operational team in the country before the attack and the logistics of their stay, as well as overseeing their departure on a flight to the tri-border region 2 hours before the attack. Meanwhile, he kept coordinators in the tri-border region informed of the progress of the Hezbollah team in Buenos Aires. Rabbani also coordinated with Hezbollah operatives in the tri-border region, including with Piloto Turismo personnel. The travel agency would also place calls to Iran, and Nasrallah himself instructed Omeri to provide Hezbollah operatives everything they needed to carry out the attack. In turn, Omeri provided operatives with forged passports and identity cards, money, maps of Buenos Aires, and information on persons to contact in the Argentine capital, including at least one individual at the Iranian embassy. The bombing itself was carried out by Ibrahim Bero, a Lebanese citizen who entered Argentina through the tri-border region using a fake European passport. The C4 explosive used in the bombing was smuggled into the country through an Iranian diplomatic pouch, and it was assembled into a bomb in the tri-border region before being sent to Buenos Aires. Overall, it appears that the AMIA bombing was a meticulously planned and coordinated operation, with Rabbani and perhaps a few others serving as the key touchpoints in parallel tracts of activity performed by Iran and Hezbollah.